Radio Tatras International, from the heart of Europe to the world.
Welcome back to Postcard from Poprad, ladies and gentlemen. And I have to say, I forgot to mention all the radio stations that we appear on. Replay, Talk Radio, X, FM, all these stations. You'll have to announce yourselves this week, ladies and gentlemen.
Breeze!
We're going to mention Breeze! We're going to mention everybody! There are dozens of places. We're on Spreaker, we're on all sorts of things. So anyway, have a look, you'll find us. Let's move on. First word, first story of the second half.
First words.
Walking around in my half-mast pants, right? Warlord Charles Taylor is to serve 50 years, his 50-year sentence for war crimes in Sierra Leone, oh, ladies and gentlemen. I've lost the power of speech now as well.
And collect yourself.
But why? Why is he going to serve this time in a British jail? Why can't he serve it in his own country?
Because you guys said you wanted international criminals.
No, we did, actually. You're right. Yeah, absolutely, we did. Yeah, it's one of those weird things where, for some inexplicable reason, we have to elect to look after certain war criminals. I'm sure there's more reasons behind it, but this was a special court in Sierra Leone. They jailed him for 50 years, right? Last month, that's when they jailed him for 50 years. His offences include terrorism, murder, rape, and using child soldiers. All of them, of course, are things that he needs jailing for, or maybe even worse if you believe in that kind of thing. But why is he going to come here? Why is we going to spend £80,000 a year looking after him?
Because you put your hand up and said that you would.
I know, there it is. Old people are freezing to death in the homes because they've got to choose between. And this is literally, we've not touched on this story. In Britain, the choice now is heating or eating. People on minimum incomes have now got to decide, do I have something to eat or do I put the heating on? And yet we are looking after some murderous old fool like this in our jails at the cost of £80,000 a year. It's ludicrous. Whether we had to do it or not, it's ludicrous and shameful.
Isn't there a way for you guys to, I mean, we founded our parliamentary system and our legal system on yours because it was you guys who came over and made it. So isn't there a way to repeal these things? Isn't there a way to say, no, I don't want to do that anymore?
I think we should. I think you're absolutely right. You've hit the nail on the head, Rachel. What we'll do is do what we used to do and send him to Australia.
Yeah, well, you know, we're a convict nation. You think we know just the pubs to send him to, Lee, those ones with the broken windows and the smashed chairs. We'll just lock him in one of those. He'll be finished off in a week.
But he can't have a drink because he
might get testy, given that he's, you know, sort of got propensity for rage. But I think, you know, given your current economic climate, I think repealing that law would be really clever.
I do as well. I think it's just amazing. And anybody who's got any ideas about what it's all about, please write into RTIFM, studio at RTIFM, and tell us what you think about it. Let's move on. Do we need to mention the Royal Mail sell-off? No, I don't think we do. But let's mention it briefly. Yeah, Royal Mail shares in the UK have gone up more than 38% to 456p a share at the start of conditional dealings on the London Stock Exchange. Why do you want to buy into the Royal Mail, you idiots?
This is so funny because, you know, I've been seeing this all over Facebook, and because I don't live where you do, I have only a half a sense of what's going on. But if it's anything like Australia Post, there's no way you'd buy shares in it. It's like, why would you do that?
Well, that's it. That's exactly my point. Well, it's a business which now is archaic. Its forms of delivery have been the same since Robin Hood. Robin Hood. Then he used to deliver mail by coach, didn't he? And Wells Fargo in America. All that's gone by the by now. We have emails. Emails are accepted in courts as evidence, everything. We do not need letters that cost 60p to send and take a week to arrive. You might as well send it by pigeon or wagon. You know,
really
or wagon. I suppose the
investing in that business is like betting on a three-legged horse. It just can
well, that's how the mail comes now, yeah. Well, I think the only benefit I can see to buying into the Royal Mail is that you will have access to phenomenal databases and also this incredible yes. network into everybody's lives. What about, see, Google can't buy it, although I'm sure they wouldn't want to buy it, but they can't buy it because you can't, anybody wants to invest more than £10,000 in it. See, that's a weird thing, isn't it? If you want to invest more than 10 grand in the Royal Mail in Britain, you can't do it. You will automatically be barred. So what they're doing, now, does this sound bad? Let's have a think about this. They are selling the Royal Mail in little packets to the little people of Britain. And we all know it's a business that's failed and has priced itself out of it. Are the little people of Britain being ripped off again? What do you think?
It sounds like they're being set up to fail.
Scary, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It's like, why don't they just take the $10,000 from little man in house, saying, "Oh, my, looks pretty hot," and just set it on fire? Why don't they do that?
Why don't they use that?
Solve your heating problem.
Why don't they sell the business to somebody who is going to make a difference to that business? You know, you have shareholders meetings where people can say how they feel. Well, they're not. They're selling it to little people who've got a few quid in the bank and just want to find a way of increasing the value of their money. And quite rightly, at the moment, it's gone up quite exponentially. But it doesn't mean it's going to go up in the future because it's a failed business. That's why the government wants to get rid of it, for God's sake.
So if the government doesn't want it, it's clearly not earning any revenue. So why would you buy into it?
Why would you buy into it?
This is a prank story. Nobody would actually do that.
It's a bizarre thing. Let's move on then to The Guardian and what The Guardian's been doing. I think this is amazing, but also very, very scary. Security experts have warned that leaks published in The Guardian could lead to widespread loss of life, and they're saying it's the most horrendous thing that's happened since the 1950s when Philby and Philpot, or whatever he was called, started covertly selling the British secrets. MI5 are really, really worried about it. Do we know what this story is about? Basically, what's happened, and I admire The Guardian for doing this. The Guardian, quite a paper over on the left of the media, has come across certain documents taken by Edward Snowden, a US secret agent who fled the US and now is living in Russia. And they've published these documents, which reveal all sorts of things that have happened behind closed doors at GCHQ and all the other spy parts of Britain. And the Guardian's taken it upon themselves to make these public. Now, they must have realised what damage they potentially could be doing to the UK because they're revealing things which are quite literally state secrets. And MI5 are saying that it's trounced them, it's caused them so much trouble. But in principle, I have to stand up for the right of the country, not for newspapers, but the rights of the members of the country to know what's happening in their name. And that's what The Guardian is actually doing. They're doing a good old-fashioned job of revealing what is happening behind closed doors in our names. What do you think about that?
As a generic
view, not as particularly on this.
It's, you know what, it just echoes back to the whole WikiLeaks thing. It's the same argument, I think, in a generic sense, it's the same exact argument. But, you know, clearly from two different vehicles, but still it's the same argument. Do we or do we not have the right to know what's going on? And I think the law of, you know, privacy of the Privacy Act and all that stuff, Freedom of Information Act, et cetera, et cetera. They're sort of engineered to sort of block us from seeing this stuff. But really, in the end, I don't know if I want to know what's going on.
Well, yeah, that's I understand what you say. You see, at the moment, I think this is a critical story to the world's media, not just to the British media. I think it's very critical because at the moment, you know, as you probably heard, the UK's rejected the newspaper's charter for defending people and for regulating itself, and they've rejected that based on the fact that they want it to be a government way of controlling the press. That is terrifying because the basic reason for the press to be there is to expose the government and people in power. That's one of the tenets of what the press is about. The Guardian has gone out on a limb on this in with all this going on in the background and revealed some things which I can understand exactly what you're saying, Rachel, the things that perhaps you don't want to know about and shouldn't be revealed to the world. But this is a blow. This is a punch for press freedom. This is somebody standing up and punching the air and saying, we want a free press. And I respect The Guardian for doing that.
I do too. I think it's really brave, actually, of them to do this. This could have potentially just exploded in their faces and, you know, still might do. But it's very brave to put yourself out there and do it alone and be the first one to do it. That's very brave, and I think it's also, you know, pretty commendable. At least they're, you know, they've got some integrity.
Absolutely, yeah.
I don't know if, you know, by the very nature of the situation, whether or not there were things that they maybe they can't if they're going to do a move like this, they can't censor themselves either.
There is
so that's why they gave information.
Very good point, Rachel. There are confines within which they would have to work within this. You know, there are legal confines, and there are all sorts of things that pressures that would be brought to bear on them before they actually published it. But ultimately, that is their job to get around that and move on into telling the truth as much as they can. I think it's despicable that people want to muzzle the press. I can't believe why any sensible human being would consider to have the press controlled by a government, by your own government, would see that as a good thing. Yes, we've upset a few people. We've done some bad things. But in fact, it's been proven in the past few weeks that the press did nothing that commercial enterprises such as lawyers, banks, and all sorts of people were doing exactly the same thing. And why are lawyers allowed to regulate themselves? Well, you know, why then do we pick on the press? It's the most scary thing, really is.
It really is. Because when you have to, you know, I as a consumer of the press, I don't want to be told what I can and cannot read.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Told like what information I can and cannot have by a government that I didn't personally elect into power. So that ruffles me always. I mean, if Tony Abbott had control over our press, I would probably leave. Actually, I'd get on a little boat. No, I wouldn't. Boats that come to or from here are very dodgy track records.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. Or something.
It is. What you're saying is right. And the thing is, what the general public do not seem in the UK, or the vociferous general public, who are following that ridiculous, pompous, snooty actor, Hugh Grant. Why has he become a political leader in the UK? Hugh Grant, the man who appeared in those stupid films about that woman who wears big knickers. Why is he...
Eyes like a bloodhound.
He's got eyes like a bloodhound. And what did he get caught doing in LA? And now he's the leader of one of our... Yes, dear.
What a load of foolish!
Thank you, I couldn't remember that. Anyway, yeah, let's move on. Right. What about the Oz recount demanded? Hey, hey, here's one for you.
Yeah, this is all a bit messy. Western Australia is... Western Australia, first of all, to give you a mental picture, my ladies and gentlemen's friends out there, in Australia, we have all the fuss and business going on the East Coast with all the states there. And then way over the other side of the country, we've got Western Australia, which is basically its own country. And when I say, they have always said, you should just chop us off because we can look after ourselves. They don't have much to do with anybody on the East Coast. They've got a massive mining industry over there. They basically run themselves. This is why this is a big deal. Because this messy situation going on with this Senate cap, it's 14 votes. 14 votes.
Is that all now, it is?
That's all it is. And when you get to that, and they actually, what they're asking for a recount, and that's correct, because under as our Federal Election Commission, but you have to have a recount if it's within a certain parameter of votes. So if it gets down to a wee little number, you've got to have a recount because you have to. There has to be a decisive winner. Otherwise, it goes back and you have to do this whole process. So people have to go and vote again and blah, blah, blah. So this is a really big deal because once you have control of the Senate, it's like, I mean, we have, as I said before, our parliamentary system is exactly the same as yours. Yeah. So whoever's, it doesn't matter what's going on in the House of Reps. If somebody's got a little tiny power in the Senate, they can hold everything. And we don't want it held up by little tiny parties that are the Shooters and the Fishers party, for goodness sake.
Well, that's it. So, yeah, 14 votes. It is a crazy situation. If I'd have been a councillor, I'd have just dumped them.
I would have. Yeah, exactly. I think I would have just gone, what? What? I'm going to leave through this very squeaky door.
Have you got a squeaky door as well?
I don't, but I enjoy your squeaky door.
My squeaky door hasn't squeaked.
It hasn't. It does when you've been delivered sausages and coffee throughout our lovely broadcast. You know what? I've been delivered nothing. Everybody's asleep. That's why. That's all right. Petra, do you have a squeaky door?
Yes, we do. We have but not in a flat. We have it in a studio.
Okay, that's all right then. That's all right. That's annoying. Yes, go on, Lars.
All I was going to say, since we're talking about sausages and coffee.
Yeah.
Let's go on to, would you go on a corset diet? Extreme weight loss trend sees women constricting their ribs for 12 hours a day to shrink their waistline by up to 6 inches. What the hell?
I get the vision in my head of that scene in Gone with the Wind when Scarlett O'Hara is getting all cinched up by her mammy.
Yeah.
She's holding onto the bedpost for dear life and she's... It's clearly in quite a lot of agony. This is ridiculous. The only way to lose weight is for you to change your lifestyle, and that is healthy diet and exercise. Everything else is all BS.
I'm not sure. Anyway, Petra, have you ever worn a corset, dear?
No.
Good girl. Right. Talking about healthy diets, what about the vegetarian who's terrified of vegetables? How can she be a vegetarian if she's not eaten any for 21 years? This story is rubbish.
It's hilarious. And can you imagine her dental issues for starters? And has she got scurvy? And
she's not a sailor.
She'd be a good pirate.
She's a pirate. Got one eye. Yeah.
Honestly, this is ridiculous. If you're a vegetarian but you're afraid of, you know, vegetables, that really limits where you can go with your dietary intake. And so what this woman's decided that she's going to do instead, she eats is sweets and crisps. This is not I'm sure your five food groups are not represented there.
Can I just ask the young ladies on this program a very interesting question, because I don't understand it, because I'm just a manly man. Do not sweets and crisps have animal additives in them?
They do.
They do.
Well, yes, stupid woman.
But she might not be a. She might be. She just doesn't mean she's a vegan.
No, because she'd be from Mars then, wouldn't she? Maybe that's what she eats on Mars.
No, she's what? I'm just lying down a bit. As we're progressing through this program, I'm sort of scooching down the bed a bit more, and now I'm actually in bed.
We actually, both of us are screeching. We've now reached the stage of screeching. Let's just screech. It's like bringing the program to a halt. We're screeching to a halt, ladies and gentlemen. Oh dear, oh dear. Forget that veg. Forget that story about the vegetarian who doesn't eat vegetables because she's scared of them. That is the most stupid story I've ever come across.
So why did you pick it?
Because it's stupid.
Okay.
We wanted to mock her. We're mocking her. Excuse me, lady, vegetarian issues. Yeah. We mock you.
We mock your brow.
Choices.
Right, here's one that both of you young ladies can answer. I'm not answering it on the grounds I might incriminate myself.
Right.
More than half of couples don't have sex on their wedding night, mostly because the groom is too drunk. Has anybody got any experience of that?
I do.
You do?
Yes, I do. Not only was...
Saying you do doesn't mean you didn't have sex on your wedding night.
Hang on. Let me make an announcement. Whoever Rachel and Petra are married to, your secrets are about to be revealed.
I didn't answer your question. It was Rachel.
This man is now my ex-husband. But on our wedding night,
that's it. Punch him when he's down.
Well, no, on our wedding night, the reason why we didn't have sex was A, he decided I was 8 months pregnant on our wedding night, and the next morning I was still 8 months pregnant. But we went up to the suite that we've been given with fantastic hotel suite. My parents got it for us. And he said, I'm going to nick down and grab some cigarettes. I said, okay. And he never came back. Next morning. This is hilarious.
God, what experiences have you got, Rachel? Oh, sorry, Petra, sorry.
So to you.
I don't know why is it called wedding night, because my wedding finished at like 7 in the morning, so it was a wedding day.
That's how she rolls.
Well, here's my story. This is a true story. I'm not making this up. This is absolutely true. On my first wedding, which is...
How many have you had?
Oh, nearly. Just over a dozen. But I'm only 20. And so it's like been really hard work for me. But on my first wedding, and me and my ex-wife, the woman I am now going to embarrass, although it wasn't her fault, we get on really well now. It's taken us 30 years, even though I'm only 20. But we now get on. And what happened on our wedding night, we were in this wonderful hotel in the centre of Manchester. Really posh, really special. I was a bit drunk, I've got to admit. And I swept her up in my arms when it was time to go to bed. And I walked her through the dance floor with everybody clapping. It was like being in a film. Everybody's going, yay, and clapping. And there was the lift to take us up to our paradise by the dashboard light. And as I walked towards the list, I swung round to say goodbye to everybody. Ooh. With her in my arms, laying my arms like that. Yeah, and I banged her head on the list and knocked her out.
Oh, Lee! I wouldn't have slept with you either.
It's not funny, that, is it? Why are you laughing? That's not funny!
It's really not. I wouldn't.
No, we're really feeling sorry for her.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, yeah, we are, but it's like, oh, that's terrible. Was she injured?
No, she was all right. She's just unconscious. So, yeah.
Oh, some people like that.
Oh, yeah. No, don't go down that road. Derek will sell me off in the morning. What about the weather? Do we believe that the story I've headlined, ooh, no, about the weatherman at Hartford CBS. Do you believe this is a true story?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't think so. What do you think?
Well, I... Obviously, On that reaction, I now know that Rachel's not ready. I think she covered it up well. I think she covered it up well.
I'm really hoping that you'll tell our lovely ladies and gentlemen the story, so they know what we're talking about.
And that is not telling Rachel off for not reading it. That's selling that naughty Eric off for disappearing 3 minutes before the show. Anyway, I'll read it, right? I'll read it in my best reading voice, right? This is the story, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. The Weatherman at Hartford CBS affiliate WFS. Oh, God, that's interesting, isn't it? Discovered, to his horror, what happens when you ignore the 3-second rule when he shoveled his own cat's vomit into his mouth. Oh. Why vomit on the Murray?
I don't know. Do you think it's, you know how there's this phenomenon now of what they call the prankvertising? And they set up situations and then they put it on YouTube and then it goes viral.
Yeah.
And that way they're selling their product. So
you could well be right.
You know what I mean?
I do. I think you're absolutely right. Why on air? Answer this simple question. Why on air would you bend down and pick something that you think is food that you've dropped on the floor? Why would you bother? Live on air. It's a load of rubbish.
Load of rubbish. What does that say about you as a person, that you eat things off the ground? You know, what does that say? And what does that say to, you know, your community that you're live, you know, on air in front of? You know, not me want to kiss you.
I don't know. No, we can't say that. Right. Anyway, no. Well, right. No, let's go back to Australia, ladies and gentlemen. I've just shot myself by what my mind said to me. Right. What about this duck-filled flatipus?
This is a brilliant story. I love this story. It's so cool. This guy was driving through a flooded river, and he went through it, and he got out the other side, and then he's driving back to Canberra, our nation's capital, and he hears this kind of scratching noise from coming from somewhere in the front of the car, and he gets very curious about it, and he pulls over, lifts the bonnet, and inside the engine bay, just sort of perched on a pipe of some description, is a duck-billed platypus. And it wasn't injured or harmed in any way, and she's now been nicknamed Hilux after the vehicle, which is really cute. But she's Hilux. Made it all the way. Yeah.
I had a Hilux. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
That's all right. And so this little platypus has made it all the way, 15 kilometres, hanging on, and there's nowhere to sit in an engine bay. Not like there's a chair for her to sit on or anything.
Your personal experience of that, Rachel, yeah.
Yeah, actually, yes, but that's another story and a whole lot of wine. But no, this little thing was hanging on by its claws, literally hanging on for dear life by its claws, but was not injured in any way. So the this guy who discovered said platypus alerted the park rangers, and they came and they fetched her, and now she's all good. She's been returned to where she came from. It's a really lovely story.
I think it's a brilliant story.
There's a fantastic YouTube on it, actually. So if you go to YouTube and Google platypus in engine bay, you'll find
that's
it.
It's brilliant. Do that, ladies and gentlemen. That's the end of the show. Say goodbye, Rachel.
Bye, Rachel.
Say goodbye, Petra.
Goodbye, Petra.
And goodbye, Lee.
Radio Tatras International gets on your wavelength. www.rti.fm